Edible Adventures. Essbare Abenteuer. Heute, ich bin Chris vom Podcast Erlebnis Irland. In der heutigen Episode besuchen wir Chloe Woods in Dorf. In ihrem Garten und in ihrem fast schon verwunschenen Wald bei ihrem Cottage. Sie beschäftigt sich mit essbaren Abenteuern, beziehungsweise mit Gaumengenüssen und Gaumenfreuden und mit längst vergessenen Pflanzen, vor allem längst vergessene essbare Pflanzen. Sie veranstaltet Workshops und Touren durch ihr Gelände. Farm ist vielleicht der falsche Ausdruck, durch ihren Garten, durch ihren Märchengarten und versucht den Besuchern auf diese Weise wieder Pflanzen nahezubringen, wie sie früher in Irland beheimatet waren, im Urwald und im Hausgarten und auch wie man aus genau diesen Kräutern und Pflanzen leckere Gerichte zaubert.
So, hello, we are in Glengariff at the moment at a company that is called Two Green Shoots. And I'm talking to Chloe Woods and she's telling us today about edible wildflowers.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. I was just saying what a joy it is to finally see a bit of sunshine. So we're going to have a little wander up into the woods and we'll kind of talk wild edible plants as we go, with a bit of tasting and you'll be able to share a bit of a flavour of what these plants taste like as we go.
We had a nice drink before that. What was it made of?
So it's made of the two trees that we're stood under, rowan or mountain ash, blended with hawthorn, also known as white thorn. And they're two native trees that grow all throughout Ireland, but would be really synonymous with kind of old hedgerows. You'd often find them. And this time of year, they're in blossom, they're in flower. So you have these clouds of white flowers, and just like you would with say elderflower, you can make a syrup using them, and syrups are such a beautiful way of kind of capturing the flavor of different seasons because it's not diluted down. It kind of is the real essence of that particular botanical. So we had a syrup in a drink to celebrate a bit of sunshine.
And looked nice, and I was really tasting fruity and sweet, and can get used to it.
I love anything with a bit of a sparkle as well. It's just so refreshing. The joy of a syrup is, you know, you can make it, you can use it in so many ways. Like you can pour it over your crepes or pancakes. You can, I do a lot of sorbets. With different botanical syrups, you can you can add it into sort of jams and jellies to get an extra kind of flavor of a different botanical with your fruit. They're so versatile, so if anybody wants to make a syrup, on our website we have a little blog and there's actually lots of different recipes on there, and the basic syrup ones on there as well.
Can you mention the address of the website?
Yeah, it's twogreenshoots.com. And that's spelt T-W-O as opposed to the number. But yeah, get onto our botanical blog and you'll see loads of different ideas of things to do with these wild plants. So we've just come up and started in just the entrance to our foraging trail. So this trail was actually created over three very, very wet weeks last March. It was the wettest March on record. Aww. And we had three French landscaping students that joined us, and we must have gone through about two sets of waterproofs every day. It was biblical. But anyway, we had this. It's a 3-acre portion of old plantation woodland and native temperate rainforest. And it had become really inaccessible with invasive alien plants. So in Glengariff, where we are, we have a big problem with Rhododendron ponticum. Mm-hmm. And it's a funny time of year for you to visit because people ooh and ah over it. It's the plant that has these bright pink, you know, really blousy flowers. But it's actually it's a real ecological menace. It's doing huge damage to our native woodland, and so this patch is no different. We had, over the course of those 3 weeks, we took out 2,500 plants. So that'll give you an idea of just how swamped it had become. And they were through from like little saplings, little seedlings, right through to big trees almost. And we're very passionate about recycling materials on site. So as we were removing that rhododendron, we were recycling it all into different structures. So all of the really big chunky timbers we use to make our balcony and our staircase down around the house. All of the kind of the branches were then chipped to make the pathways that we're walking on in the trail. So everything was repurposed and kind of recycled. So this foraging trail that we now have is both an opportunity to share with people these incredible wild flavors, but it's also, on a practical level, it gives us an access track to be able to monitor for any seedling rhododendron that would come back in, along with kind of six other invasive species that we have in this area. So it's actually it's both, you know, an experiential space, but it's also a really practical kind of monitoring trail. And we're stood, so speaking of edibles anyway, we're stood beside a couple here. And the first one,
purple one,
I'd like to show you is the little purple flowers. And this is called dog violet. So we've got two different species of violet. We have sweet violet, which has these very sweet flavoured little purple flowers. And then this one, which is dog violet. So it's unscented. And you can eat the flowers, but you can also eat these really cute little heart-shaped leaves. And you can have a taste, see what you think. But they're it's like a buttery kind of lettuce leaf. Very kind of creamy, mild. You can add it into salads.
So the flower is buttery and the other one is a leaf. It's more like salad, like lettuce.
Both of them are, both have that kind of real buttery, creamy flavour. So we'd use the flowers in like on cakes or desserts, and then the leaves in salads or pestos we use as a base as well. And you just pick kind of the top few leaves, and they're gorgeous. They're really cute.
What are they called? Dog violets.
Which, and the dog, it gets its name. I mean, it's a terrible name because like the insinuation is that dogs don't really have a scent. Well, dogs, if anyone has a dog, you well know they have a smell and it's not good most of the time. They've rolled in dog or in fox poo or badger poo, or they're wet. They have that wet dog smell. It's actually a bad common name, really. But those, dog violets. And just because I'm here, this is another one. Lot of people know this plant. Do you recognize what it is?
It's kind of a berry.
Blackberry. Exactly. Yeah. So blackberry, it's a really, really popular, you know, it's probably the wild plant that everybody knows. You know, as kids, we would be sent out with a big bucket and told not to come home until it was full of berries, you know. And they're absolutely delicious. But what a lot of people don't realize is actually the tips, so the little leaves, are edible. And they've got a slightly kind of mushroomy flavor. I tend to blend them in with other greens, or saute them slightly. So if you get like a bit of butter in a pan and just fry these down, they're really, really gorgeous on like a bit of toast.
Sounds yummy.
And we use these predominantly on our tours, actually, as a kind of a base in in pesto as well. Mm-hmm. But the key thing is you're picking just the very tip so you can see how quickly they get thorny and sharp, mm-hmm. whereas the thorns on the little young leaves haven't developed yet, so they're like feathery and soft, and they're okay for eating. And the other thing that's great about foraging, particularly bramble, is that it's also maintenance, so it keeps our pathways clear.
Yeah.
So every time we go and we graze the little uh-huh. tip, it stops the pathway from growing over. Because we're actually inside a deer fence here, so there's mm-hmm. no deer that would be coming in and grazing any of this material. Mm-hmm. So we have to be the deer, mm-hmm. you know, selectively kind of grazing things out.
And I think you can make tea out of the bigger leaves too.
You can, yeah, yeah. So the older leaves as well. There's a lot of edibles that technically you can eat, like they're not going to kill you, but they also just don't taste that great. So what we tend to focus on are the ones that actually have a, like if you're going to go to the trouble of traipsing out and you know, getting a basket together and focus on the things that either they you know, there's
so yummy.
Absolutely. Life's too short to mess true. Around with. And the tea is fine, but it's just kind of green, you know, there's nothing that special about it. Whereas the tips, you know, they actually really do have an interesting flavour. They're definitely better cooked, so we won't taste it. We won't taste mm-hmm. it here. We'll carry on up, and I'll show you. So I want to make sure we can get around the... Yes, mm-hmm. we'll carry on round.
So we're walking a bit. Yes.
So little bridge.
A series of boardwalks.
And these are actually called sweet tracks. And they're a Neolithic style of boardwalk that was discovered by an archaeologist called Ray Sweet back in the 1970s in the Somerset Levels. And he was on a dig and he kept hitting these planks of wood mm-hmm. and they carbon dated the timber to the Neolithic. Fast forward to 2 years ago, our main business is in designing nature-focused edible gardens. So we kind of keep abreast of a lot of design and like flower shows, garden shows. Mm-hmm. And we saw there was a Rewilding Britain garden, a fabulous garden that was showing at the Chelsea Flower Show. And they had sweet tracks. And I saw it there and I said to my partner, Adam, we need to build some sweet tracks. And they're basically like a boardwalk. So for crossing any particularly wet or damp ground, mm-hmm. And they're just very elegant in their design. You know, you've got these diagonal supports. Yeah, they're really secure. And then you just split a log down the middle or a saw log down the middle, and that becomes your walkway. So they work really, really well. And they also force you to find your inner kid as well.
Yeah, so what's the first thought I had? Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. You're going to walk mindfully over it. And what's really exciting is the amount of regeneration that's happening. So the reason we have this site deer fenced is mm-hmm. that there's a huge problem with deer numbers, and they basically eat any regeneration. Mm-hmm. So any kind of baby trees that would come through, they're really succulent and sweet, and the deer would just come in and eat them all. So this like lower kind of 30 acres of the site is deer fenced to protect both our gardens but also to support the natural regeneration of a lot of woodland. And it's just extraordinary how, like, we're looking at oak here, mm-hmm. there's the mountain ash or the rowan, there's a lot of hazel popping up, we've got ash, of course, mm-hmm. and you know, and they're all being planted. We haven't planted any of these. This is all either the red squirrel or the jay. It's a species of bird. They have these little larders of seeds and nuts that they hide and then forget about. And they basically then grow and become trees. Cool. So anywhere you see a little tree sapling, it's been planted by either a bird or a squirrel, which I think is kind of gorgeous.
Absolutely.
And they do it so much better than us. You know, people love, we're obsessed with tree planting because it makes such a good photo. and it makes us feel good.
Yeah, and they do it just because.
Absolutely, it's kind of an easy box ticking, but actually, you know, these trees grow where they the conditions are just right, you know. Mm-hmm. They won't grow somewhere where there's not enough light or not enough moisture. So they're off to a, you know, really strong start right from the get-go.
Lots of clover here too.
Lots of clover. And this is actually, this is called wood sorrel. And we're going to have a little taste of it. It's one of, it's an edible shamrock. It's not related, like it's not the same, you know.
That's the St. Pedrick's one.
This is, yeah, oxalis. Is the Latin, and it's just gorgeous. It tastes a little bit like a cross between grapes and apple and lemon. And we'll stop here and you can have a little pick. So the lighter the leaf, the fresher the leaf, the younger and more kind of succulent. And they're really, really lovely. You have to have these raw. So if you cook them, they turn this horrible brown and go really slimy.
A bit sour, yeah.
Yeah.
They're good.
Yeah. And the stems are almost even more intensely flavoured. Yeah. And the more you chew it, the more that kind of flavour comes through. Like, you get an initial really sour shot, mm-hmm. and then you get this lovely sort of appley, grapey. And they're carpet the forest floor. I mean, you can see they love these conditions.
They probably have lots of vitamin C when they're sour.
They're incredible. Yeah, they're very they're really, really just delicious. If you want, particularly like you know, a salad, if you want just a little bit, you know, you can do these really lovely kind of lemon fresh, mm-hmm. You know, salad dressings. Well, if you just sprinkle a few oxalis, the wood sorrel leaves in, you get that, you know, that hit. So this is a part on the trail that I always pause people at because it's quite poignant. So this site was bought by a German chap actually in the 50s who wanted to make like a hunting fishing resort. And he planted a lot of conifer woodlands as cover for deer. And he got as far as this old higgledy-piggledy stone boundary that we're looking up at here. And on the left of the wall, we have very dark, shaded conifer woodland. And on the right-hand side of the wall, we have temperate rainforest. And the temperate rainforest is what would carpet most of the west coast of Ireland. Mm-hmm. And the only reason it doesn't is because of the numbers of sheep and deer that we have that just graze it out. But this is naturally what our landscape would look like. And it's this extraordinary tangle of mosses and lichens and liverworts. And it's dominant. And yeah, and bright, you know, I mean, talk about 50 shades of green. Yeah. Like every kind of green you can imagine. And it is, you know, just teeming with life. So the left of the wall is kind of what we're doing and have done to our natural environments, is mm-hmm. kind of push the life out of them, creating these kind of ecological deserts. And then on the right-hand side of the wall, what it actually wants to become. And so we're changing the management practices. As we finish the trail, we're going to go over a road that we put in. And the roadway is to start extracting a lot of these trees to thin them out, to allow more light to come down to the forest floor and then start that
more life then too.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's also very original there. So you also have that jungle kind of feeling.
This is another wild edible. This is bilberry. Mm-hmm. So it's like the smaller sibling of the blueberry, you know, that we've cultivated to be like super size.
Is it greenish or is it, does it become blue or not?
Blue eventually. So what we're looking at here are these little pink bell-shaped flowers. So at this time of the year, they're flowering away, and if that gets pollinated, come kind of August, September time, there'll be a little berry. And the cool thing about bilberries compared to blueberries, so blueberries are actually not blue the whole way through, it's just in the skin. Whereas bilberries have that pigment right through the flesh.
Oh, wow.
So if you crush them, it literally stains pink right through. And so even though they're a lot smaller, they actually have more polyphenols within them than a blueberry would have. So they're power-packed with goodness. And you'll see they tend to prefer slightly lighter conditions. So they dominate these kind of forest glades and clearings that we have. They don't grow as much kind of in the darker shade. But as we're starting to thin the woodlands out, you know, we've taken the rhododendron out, and we're starting to like thin any big conifers that have seeded mm-hmm. in that we can't remove. We basically ring bark, so we just chainsaw through the stem and that prevents, that basically kills it off. So that will become a giant bug hotel.
Okay.
And really valuable for wildlife as it rots down.
And this one is also quite great here. So you have a little nest on the tree.
This is what happens when you'll have some kind of pest that'll burrow into the tip, the growing tip of that. This is a birch, silver birch. And there'll have been some little critter that's buried into the end of it. And what the tree tries to do is like carry on growing, but it does so by like encasing whatever's irritating it. And then it started shooting out from the side. So there's some little, there's different species that'll do it.
Uh-huh. Looks cool.
Yeah, they're fun. And these are things like, you know, when you actually slow down enough to open your eyes up to these things in nature, there's so many extraordinary stories, you know, to learn about and flavours. This is a nice little edible plant. So this down here is actually called bittercress. And if you like roquette, mm-hmm. you'll love this. It's got a real kind of peppery kick to it.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah, it's lovely in salad.
It tastes like cress.
Isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can eat the little white flowers as well. Mm. So you can see it's quite a tall little plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it seeds everywhere. So if you have a patch, it will literally, you know, soon kind of carpet. But you can, if you're using it for a salad, you can literally just pick off all of these pieces and pop them in. And you have a really nice little
add-on.
Yeah. So that's bittercress.
Yum, yum. So how long have you been working on the garden?
So we've been here 6.5 years. And that was very much focused on the garden itself. And then last year we added the foraging trail. And then just this year, we're actually just coming up to it now, this woodland event space. Mm. So with the Irish climate, we had a clearing here. And we'd gather. This is where we go foraging for the first kind of hour of an experience, and then the second part is eating. And it's really important that people get to experience that whole process, from collecting to actually learning how to make a whole range of dishes using the plants that they've collected. Mm. And we kept getting rained on, so this year we decided to make this covered space. And like I was saying earlier, we're really passionate about using materials that are of the land, and not just of the land, but are of this land and of this space. And that really kind of connects and grounds, you know, the structures and the features. So this whole building, this, you know, it's a roundwood timber rondavel, is made out of wood from 20 meters away. You know, we've literally, it's just come over the wall I say just, there was a bit of processing involved, but you know, it's felled, just sprung out, it just leapt over the wall, the timbers went up, the rafters came across,
lucky you.
And job done. It was like 5 minutes. 5 minute job and we were sorted. No, there was a bit of bark stripping, it has to be said, a bit of bark stripping, which I became totally obsessed with. As so Will, who you met actually when you just arrived, he led on the kind of the design and the construction of this. And he was so exasperated with me because I just would come up and I'd be like, just a bit more bark, just a bit more bark stripped. But it's such beautiful wood. So this is larch. And then we use spruce. We have a little mill and we mill that to create the roof itself. And then we've got moss from the forest. So we're actually going to be kind of clear felling a section of that woodland to replant with fruit and nut crops and also native woodland. So there's going to be quite heavy machinery going in there. So we decided to actually save a lot of the moss that will be, you know, kind of trashed really, run over, and actually bring it in and put it onto the roof to protect it. So, and then all of the side branches from the trees were chipped to create the floor, this wood chip floor. And we're going to have great fun up here this summer. So we have foraging tours every Friday. We run a lunch tour and a dinner tour. We've just had one this morning.
And outdoor survival you do too?
And we do, yeah. So we've hosted Outdoors Ireland for 3 years now to run bushcraft courses and survival courses on the mountain. So, you know, Esk actually runs all the way up to the Cork Kerry border, and the mountain has like amazing cliffs and rock faces, and there's more woodlands kind of further up. So Nathan, he runs, you know, up to a dozen different courses here through the year, and this is kind of the direction that we're moving in, you know, really wanting people to be able to use this space. You know, we're chatting to somebody who wants to do a yoga retreat up here, and you know, really, but it'd be the kind of the running theme through everything that we do is about really slowing down and connecting with landscape and connecting with place. And yeah, we're really excited about that kind of collaborative working, you know, because there's only so many hours in the day and stuff that I can do. Mm-hmm. And my real passion's that kind of food and that flavour element. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like to go rock climbing or to go, you know, like what they do up there with, you learn how to make your own shelter out of the materials of the land that you sleep in, and then there's foraging elements as well, but you learn to make a kitchen, you know, build a whole camp kitchen, a food prep area, how to, you know, make fire, how to, like, all these basic kind of cookery skills, like pared back, stripped back, skills that we've really lost. We're thrilled. And we have a levitating kitchen. So this goes up into bar mode. We're going to have some music events here during the summer. We have a roll-in stage that will fill the very centre. And then this will go up to bar mode and we're going to have some drinks. And then it goes down into bench mode. It's great fun.
It's great fun.
When is your season?
Our season, it runs from beginning of May until the end of September for the foraging trail. And then for the garden, it's June to end of August. So it's a little bit shorter. But yeah, this has become by far and above our most popular tour and our most popular experience. And it's something that we're going to be adding an extra section to the trail, going up along a waterfall and actually then taking people out of the woods and onto the mountainside. And there's a whole other world of flavors up there that, you know, I'm really looking forward to kind of sharing with people. So yeah, there's a lot more coming down the pipeline, but for now I'm just delighted to have, of course, we built this and there's not been a drop of rain since. On any day we've run a tour, it's been absolutely glorious, and people are like, maybe we'll sit out. Sod's law, as soon as you make a rain shelter,
we never see the rain again. So,
well, that's a way why you do that, this.
Yeah, and it will be back. We know we live in a rainforest for a reason. You know, we have a significant quantity of rain that comes down. Now we'll just meander back down, and we can talk about a couple more bits as we go. Are there any other questions or things that you wanted to find out about, or?
So, you do also cooking courses with the plants?
Only as part of like a foraging experience, yes. So for me, it's really important that people kind of get to experience the whole process of like collecting the plants, and then actually be part of making the different dishes. Mm-hmm. So at the minute, our most interactive experience is the foraging one. Mm-hmm. We do garden tours as well on edible plants. But people learn about the plants, and then they get served a range of dishes, and I'll kind of talk to them about, but it's not as kind of interactive. The foraging people literally are like, you know, using a pestle and mortar to make pesto, you know, and are very kind of involved in baking breads on sticks. And it's a really nice, like, intergenerational. If anyone's traveling to Ireland and they want something that, you know, both the kids will adore, but so will grandparents, if grandparents are coming with, or aunts and uncles. It's such a wonderful kind of interactive experience for all ages to kind of get stuck into. So that's, I think, one of the other reasons that tour has become so popular is that it's really, kids can get very, you know, quite rightly bored plodding around a garden. But when they're like picking and tasting and touching and smelling, and
They remember too,
because then they know, okay, I can eat that, I heard about that, so...
Absolutely. And they're such quick learners. I mean, kids are extraordinary. You know, you tell them, provided they're listening at that moment, like, they've taken it on board and they know. They're very perceptive. So, yeah.
Do you have a favourite plant?
Nettle.
Nettle?
Yes.
Why?
I love the blooming nettle. It's so persecuted, you know. People hate the nettle because of the sting. Yeah, like, you know, and of course, you know, it's painful. But like, plants will only protect themselves if they've got something really precious. Like, it takes a lot of resources for a plant to either create a chemical that will sting you, or a thorn, or, you know, whatever kind of protection mechanism it uses. It's an extra outlay of you know, limited resources. So they'll only invest in it if without, they would be totally eaten to the ground. Mm-hmm. And that's the case in nettles. They are a complete superfood. Like, they've got the highest level of protein of any leafy green. They have about 10 times as much iron as spinach. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people, I'm like, Popeye should have been eating nettles, not spinach, to get really strong, you know?
Can you do something against the stinging part? When you eat it?
Yeah, so as any heat applied to nettle gets rid of the sting.
Oh, that sounds good.
So you can steam them, you can fry them, you can put it in a mug of water and pour boiling water over and drink it as a tea, and the leaves in that mug will not have any sting. So just as long as you heat them, you know, and if you're steaming, it's literally just until they start wilting, and then they're sorted. And there's a good technique, I'll show you, where this is actually, when we came here, there was no nettles, and I was absolutely horrified for a complete nettle addict. It was it was a disaster. So we brought in 200 tons of manure when we redid the driveway. And of course, where there's manure, there's nettles. So we have nettles everywhere now, up and down, and I'm absolutely delighted. But there's a trick. If anyone wants to go picking nettles and you don't have a pair of gloves, they're a great test of character. Basically, if you go in, you know, a bit, feeling a bit wobbly and a bit feeble, they're going to sting you. You need to go in with confidence, gusto, and commitment with a nettle, and then they won't. And the trick is, pick one. We only ever pick like the kind of top 4 to 6 leaves. Any further down and it gets really woody and tough. And like I was saying earlier, if you're going to the trouble, we want stuff that tastes good. You know, we want sweet, succulent leaves. We don't want tough old things. You don't want to pick nettles if they're flowering. And the flowers look a bit, that one's just coming into flower. You can see these little kind of fern-like, feathery growths coming out the side. Those are the flowers. So you want to pick them before they're flowered. And then, so without the gloves, you want to go in from the side and just pinch the stem. What you do in doing that is you actually crush these little hairs that have the stinging chemical in. And no sting. Do you want to have a go? You can have a go on that one. So in on the side really quickly. That's it. Pinch, 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 pinch.
Yeah, it didn't hurt.
There you go.
Wow.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Well done. You want to have a go? No. So that then into a mug, boiling water over. I love it with a bit of mint even. Nettle and mint tea is gorgeous. Got this earthiness from the nettle and then a bit of sweetness from the mint and a little spoon of honey, and it's a really beautiful tea, packed full of minerals and just a real tonic kind of at this time of year. If you're a nettle addict like me and you can't get enough of them, because when they flower you can't pick the leaves anymore, I basically treat this like a cut and come again salad. So I go in with some shears and cut it all down, and then you'll get a new flush of leaves coming up and you can just keep on picking.
A lot of them right are through. Headless.
Can you see we've been picking? Yeah. This is usually we get as far as here and then we go up. But what's interesting is these will actually, the side shoots will produce, you know, a fresh new leaf. So actually the more you pick them, the more you get, you know, fresh leaves coming through. So so there we go. We'll donate them back to the
to nature.
Thank you. And that's a really important thing, you know, before we finish up, is with foraging and going and collecting wild plants. There's, you know, three really, really important things to note. And the first one is we share this planet with millions and millions of other species. And the reason we're in such a mess, quite frankly, as a species right now, is that we've forgotten that. We think that humans can go in and do whatever we like, take as much as we like, and there's no, you know, no repercussions. So when we're foraging and we're collecting wild plants, we go in with respect, appreciating that this is the food for so many other species. So we need to leave the majority for others, you know, so you only ever collect a small, really small proportion. The second thing is you only ever collect at something that you're 110% sure you've identified correctly.
Makes sense.
You know, because there's not a huge amount of poisonous or toxic plants, but those that there are, they're pretty bad, you know. So be really sure, you know, you're collecting the right thing. The things we've spoken about today, you can't really confuse all that much. You know, stinging nettles, everyone knows, bramble tips, dog violet, you know, you could confuse it with sweet violet, but then they're still both edible. The third thing is be mindful where you're collecting your edible plants. So we live in a world with, there's a lot of spraying, a lot of chemicals being doused everywhere. There's a lot of, you know, cars and pollution. And also if you are going into parks, there's often very popular, they're dog walking areas. And so you don't want something that's either been sprayed by a farmer or, you know, somebody with a backpack sprayer, or a dog cocking its leg, or a car, you know. So pick, you know, spaces and places, like your gardens are such fantastic foraging places, because you've got control over what you spray or don't spray, preferably. You also know exactly, you know, if there are animals, where they're, you know, doing their business. And you can build up a really intimate relationship with what you have in your garden. And it's the best bit of all is it's not far from the kitchen, so you can dive out, collect some plants, throw them into... Exactly. You know, foraging doesn't have to be about getting in the car and travelling off, doing it on your, you know, a camping trip or a big adventure. Do it, you know... That's why we bring wild plants. We have our foraging trail, but we bring wild plants right into our garden because that's the closest to the house. And so mm-hmm. when I'm preparing a dish, I want to be able to just go out and you know, get my scissors and literally cut a whole load of wild salads mm-hmm. and a bowl's filled in like, you know, 2 minutes. I've mm-hmm. got a salad bowl and I haven't paid anything for it. Mm-hmm. I've not watered it. I've not, you know... fed those plants. They're totally adapted to this space and place, and they're so giving. Mm-hmm.
And you told me that you have plans for the next season too.
Yes, so this is a big kind of planning and redevelopment year for us. We've closed our B&B and we had a glamping unit. And we love them, and people seem to really enjoy, but we've put a pause on them because we've launched a big rewilding project over the whole site. So the current spaces that we kind of have accessible are just, you know, like a tip of the iceberg. There's a whole mountain there that we're doing some really interesting things with. We're transitioning over conifer forestry to native woodland. We're using proxy farm animals as like proxy ecosystem engineers for driving more regeneration, and we want people to be able to come and be part of enjoying that transition. But the spaces it is spectacular, with views out over Bantry Bay. So we're planning some really immersive experiential units that people will be able to come and stay in, so watch this space on that front. But for now, the gardens are open from June to August, the foraging trail from May to September, and we do tours, public tours, on Fridays and Saturdays weekly. And then if people have a big group of friends and family, we can do private tours as well on other days. We just need kind of around generally about 8 people to be able to run a tour, and we can do on a different day.
It's a bit hidden, but it's next to the U experience.
Yes, so my parents run the U experience, and it's a really lovely, they're very short season now, just July and August, but if anyone is in the area at that time, it's a lovely thing to do together. We often will have people come and do the lunchtime foraging tour, you know, have the morning up in the woods and have their lunch, and then they'll go next door and spend the afternoon exploring the incredible poetry and art. And the U experience is ultimately, it's an open air natural history museum / sculpture garden / really exploring our relationship with our surrounding environment through art and words.
Mm-hmm. Are there other things people should go to when they're here?
When they're in Glengariff, the classic everyone knows about and would be the big tourist draw in this area is Garnish Island. It is a really amazing experience. You go over on a little boat, and it's this magical island garden that was created over 100 years ago. But on the way, you'll get to see seals. There's sea eagles actually nesting out on Garnish Island. So if you're lucky, you'll actually see the eagles. It's a really, really beautiful. There's also there's a bamboo park. If people have kids and they want somewhere that they can just really run. bamboo park's amazing. Same with the nature reserve. Glengariff Woods Nature Reserve is completely free. If somebody wants like just an open access, it's open air all day, every day. That you can park in the main car park, and there's a map of all the different trails that you can do. So you can easily spend, a big part of what we do is slowing people down and getting them out of the car and actually into landscape. And Glengariff, you can fill a long weekend easily. There's boat trips that take you out mackerel fishing in Bantry Bay. Bantry Bay Charters do those. They do wildlife tours. You get to like... you know, I went out with them last year and they pulled up a lobster pot. Wow. And there was three different crabs in there. And I remember the one I really remember is the velvet crab. They're these like swimming crabs. They've got these like paddles for back legs and they kind of spin them round and they can literally swim through the water. But they taste or they feel like velvet, like a fabric. And then they've got these crazy red kind of googly eyes that look at you like, what on earth?
Don't eat me,
because they're delicious as well. That was a Freudian slip. They are actually, I haven't had them, but they're meant to be really delicious. So yeah, there's so much to do. And you know, my advice to people would be book yourself a really lovely, you know, long weekend in Glengariff and just enjoy being here. It's a magical, magical place.
Thank you, Chloe, for your time and expertise.
No problem. It's been lovely having you both, honestly. Thanks so much. And if people want to get in touch with us, the website, again, it's twogreenshoots.com. Our contact number and our email's on there. We have a newsletter people can sign up to keep in touch. But yeah,
We'll put it in the show notes.
That was Chris.
He has been here, quietly doing, is it photos in the background?
Danke Fee, danke Chloe. Danke dir, dass du mit dabei warst. Auf Facebook findest du in unserer Facebook-Gruppe eine direkte Möglichkeit, mit uns in Kontakt zu treten. Wenn du mal Lust hast, mit uns Irland zu entdecken, Irland zu bereisen, dann komm doch einfach mit uns auf einer unsere Reisen, also nicht nur hier im Podcast, sondern auch in Wirklichkeit. Ansonsten wünschen wir dir einen ganz tollen Tag und eine ganz tolle Woche. Slán und bis bald, euer Chris, dein Chris und
deine Fee.